She heard King Renly declare the Lady Brienne of Tarth the victor of the great melee at Bitterbridge, last mounted of 116 knights. As champion, you may ask of me any boon that you desire. If it lies in my power, it is yours. Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast. Founded in 2010 as Two Champs and a Chump, we thought it was best to rename and rebrand ourselves as the game did so with a second edition. Now, we are the White Book Podcast, and each week we bring you your dose of strategy, insight, and all-around geeky goodness. A huge thank you goes out to Fantasy Flight Games and George R. R. Martin for this game and world we love, but more importantly to you, our listeners. Please consider supporting us on Patreon so that we can continue to make this show the best it can, and I promise we have big plans for the future. This is The White Book. Wouldn't that be a deal to get from FFG? Be all over that.
Yes. Correct.
Turnouts would increase.
Exactly.
But how many years would it take to get it in, and how many technical difficulties would we have? It'd be like the monkey's paw story. You'd be like, oh man, I want this, and something somehow that fulfills that requirement, but it's amazingly terrible show up.
Be careful what you wish for.
Yeah, like you get to design a card. Oh, but it's just the original pinch of powder, and you get no say in it. It's like, no!
I mean, it could be worse than pinch of powder, even. It could have been, was it Den of Wolves? Was that it?
I liked Den of Wolves. It was at least
interesting. I mean, they basically created it and then did away with the mechanic that it was designed to combat. So that was awkward.
You could just have a unique suboptimal economy location.
Ooh, I like how you think. Ooh. Let's do that.
If only we had had one of those.
Might be better than the current Fleet Bottom, but
we'll see. Better for the environment as a whole.
That's my point. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, listeners may be confused by a couple of the voices you heard pop up here. Of course, I'm Will, and joining me is this week a whole slew of people, two of which one's not been on the show ever, one hasn't been on in probably a year at this point, and another is here and there. But we've got all the champions from Nationals weekend. All of the other hosts, it was pointed out to me. Everyone else that's on this week was a champion this weekend, other than me. So here I go being a chump again. Good times.
You were close, though, yeah?
I was close. If somebody hadn't remembered a brand, then I think I would have had it. But we'll get to that. We'll get to that.
You were a champion of organizing the weekend, Will.
Yep. Yeah, something like
that. There
you
go.
Oh, man. So just to make sure everybody knows, obviously, I'm Will, sometimes known as Kenan. But let's walk through folks in order of how often they appear on the podcast. And then we'll get later to what they won. So, Jesse, why don't you say hi to the folks?
Hey, my name's Jesse Carpenter. If you don't know me, I'm sorry.
At this point, I think it would be few and far between.
It's been a while. I'm sorry, White Book guys. But I'm back, and I'll be here every 2 weeks like normal.
Good, good. Well, part of the weirdness has been my fault with August being crazy. So we're back to a more regular schedule now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Next up, I think Kyle probably appears.
I think I'm next. Am I the second tallest midget in the room?
Oh,
awesome.
Wow.
Sweet. So I'm Kyle, and it's been a long time, as was my last positive tournament performance. We can all reminisce together.
I mean, it wasn't that long ago. But it was just last year's Gen Con. You were King of Swiss. I mean, that's pretty good.
Oh, geez. It feels now that, like, I guess I measure things. I don't want to say Gen Con's kind of my mental reset, but, like, now that we've had one since then, it feels like,
let's go dust off the ancient tomes of Gen Con's past.
It does feel like a long time when you kind of say it, but it's been a year and a month.
Truth.
That's not the end of it.
And for those with their eyebrows, that's why I'm considered champion. I did take our eight-man firsted draft tournament. So to continue with my
we'll talk about
things I used to be good at. Woohoo.
Yeah, we'll get there. We'll get there.
Yeah, and I'm Tommy. I am back from the danger zone of life. It's been over a year, probably, since I've been able to make the time and get on, which is far fewer than I'd like to be, but happy to make it for this episode, for sure.
Thank you for joining us.
And I am Dustin Archer, and it is my privilege to be on here for the very first time ever.
Sweet. Thank you for joining us, for sure.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, we'll get into the meat and potatoes of the episode here in just a sec. But first, before we get that far, I learned my lesson. Let nobody say I don't learn from my mistakes, but I have been pre-generating our podcast giveaway winners beforehand. So I'm just going to reiterate, folks that support us on Patreon get entered into drawings for additional prizes and such. At the moment, I'm working my way through some kind of leftover odds and ends from Nationals so that I'm not hanging on to that. I want to continue turning that back to the community, so consider supporting us on Patreon to help keep the show rolling and maybe get a little something out of the deal. So winning another National shot glass this week can be Reed W. Aaron's not here to guess the last name. Oh, no! Someone figured it out.
Yeah, it's Wilson. He's from Chicago. He's a nice guy.
Good. All right. Now we can get into the actual meat and potatoes of the weekend and the episode. So first up, we'll structure this in the order of the weekend and how the events were actually played in timeline wise, and just to help structure things even more, let's chat a little bit about people's day and kind of their perception of the event and everything based on the old order we used to use, which is going to start with the person who did worst during the day and then moving up to the person who does best. Of course, there's some impetus here on the folks that did poorly to use up less time talking, so don't expect me to talk a whole lot. So who was actually worst for the day in Joust?
That has got to be me. Definitely me.
What was your record?
I don't know. Bad, and I lost it. And then I don't know. I think I had 2 wins. I went 2-5.
Okay. Sounds like you lost the tiebreaker.
Yeah.
Okay. So what do you play for the weekend then? Or well, for that tournament?
I was going to do... As Tom says, I get this virus in my head every 2 years, and despite being a control player at heart, said I was going to take Rush. I talked with Sandy a lot, a little leading up to Nationals, and he, you know, I wouldn't say he's like a casual player. Like, obviously, he's done very, very well lately, but he's not someone that I think enjoys really grindy decks. So he's like, I got this Targ deck. It's real fast. It's real hot. It's doing real well. Give it a shot. So I took it because I haven't had a lot of time to play lately, and I thought, you know, this will be good. And the joke I used all weekend was, you don't, if you rush so fast you don't see the meta, then you don't have to know the meta, which is a lie and does not work.
Yeah.
Good words, bad idea.
It's like a great saying, though. That's
it felt
t-shirt
good
right there.
Up until round one. and then just went downhill from there. Lost an early game to Beef. Then I played Builders and just crashed out from there. I think I win my next one or two, and I was like, okay, you know, there's some hope. And then just played some buddies and lost it. Highlight of the weekend, or sorry, highlight of Joust definitely comes last round. I think I've got two wins under my belt. I'm playing Tommy in the basement. And the game's rather chatty. Real casual. Daryl is over, just kind of, we're just shooting the shit, throwing down cards. Tommy's playing Stark. And
Now, when Kyle says it's really casual, just bear in mind, before the game started, he's like, you know, okay. I'm going to really try hard.
Yeah, that lasted a lot and a half, and I was like, F it. And so I get Drogo out with Queen's Guard and some other beef, and I'm like, life is great. And Tommy does some challenge at me. I don't even... some military challenge, and I was like, whatever, unopposed. And I was like, no, I'll defend. I was like, nah, we'll still go unopposed. And I'm kind of whiffle waffling. I'm like, yeah, it's fine, take it. He's like, Kyle, if you defend, I'm just going to intimidate him down. You should probably jump in here. And I think Tommy's trying to be a bro and, like, you know, keep the game balanced. Like, let's get through this and, you know, make it an actual game. And I'm like, oh, you know what, Tom? You're right. So I defend with Drogo and Recaro, I think. And
I think you're right. It was either Drogo and Recaro or Drogo and Quotho.
Quotho. And freaking Tommy's got two Taste for Fleshes in his hand and eats my board. He just drops and goes, oh, they're gone. And I was like, you... I thought we were friends. Like, we were playing for nothing but pride here. We were just laughing half a second ago. Just cold-blooded, wasted, screen, everything went gray and slow-mo.
Yep, and then
I was just
laughing.
This sounds like the kind of person that would win a Melee tournament.
It does.
Oddly enough.
So, I loved it. It was, as Isla Raven says, it was a heartbreaking loss to my nemesis, but it was a fun way to end the day.
Show, even at the bottom, well, memorable things can happen.
Kyle had quite a streak.
True. And I have owned Tommy in Missouri. I think I was like, up until that point, it was like 3-0 against him.
Well, I think it might have been the last 4 or 5. Because we met in the finals of the first player, and you beat me during Swiss in that same tournament. And then in first player this current year,
I've had a pretty good run. But that came to an abrupt halt on the back of two dire events.
Oof. Yeah, that was fun. Fun times.
Wow. Yeah, that says a lot about how much I trust Tommy going forward. That's really good to know. Well, okay, tell you what then. Unless anybody else has any specific questions for Kyle about his performance on the day, let's maybe find out how Tommy did.
Well, I played Stark Fealty. I had reasonable success with it, making the cut in first player, like I mentioned. And I made some adjustments.
Oh, same deck?
Not exactly the same. I made some adjustments. Basically, what drove me to keep the same archetype was my utter hatred for Fleabottom. And so no matter what, I was not going to get beat by that card. So I had the Frozen Solids. I had the full-on Fun Police suite with Caitlyn and Winterfell and all the things to say no for that. And so then in the antithesis of Kyle's experience, I was just owned by Rush. I would not get set up fast enough to stop anything with any remote speed. Targaryen, as it turns out, can be quite fast these days, except if you're Kyle and you walk into blowouts. You know, I think from a overall experience in games that were, I was not just outrushed in the first two plots, the deck performed reasonably well. The games were entertaining. And, you know, at minimum, I did not have a single character jump in and flip out of me, thanks to, again, the Frozen Solids and the Last Hearth Scouts, which I absolutely love. So, still a suboptimal performance in, to my general standards, but as you know, I haven't had the time to be on the podcast, let alone practice to the level you need to succeed in a field like that. There were a lot of good players there, but it was a fun time.
It was quite a field. Quite a field. We kind of, I guess, skimmed over that in my speed to get right into things. But 72 players and a lot of well-known folks, I think, made it to this tournament. So I was incredibly happy with the field we had.
Yeah, it was, and props on that. I mean, we had, what, almost 20 more than last year's Nationals?
Yeah, something like that. And I don't know what the state breakdown was on last year's, but we had 24 different states covered. So it was a pretty impressive geographic spread, too. So, yeah. I guess at that point, does that send it to me? Probably so. Mr. 33, just barely on the bubble there for the sweet house, or not house cards, sweet agendas. Thank goodness FFG sends an additional one of those. That was the only prize I desperately wanted all weekend. So I wound up playing Tyrell Wars again. Go figure. I tinkered around with a couple other things, like some Martell Kohor that I sort of liked, but it didn't feel super consistent, so I just went with what I had the most reps with, which is, I think, usually a safe rule of thumb. You know, based on kind of chatter and looking at new cards and stuff, I kind of expected a lot of more Martell and Stark, or Martell and Stark, sorry, Martell and Targ. Made maybe half a dozen or so switches to the deck after Gen Con, and then proceeded to get just brutally reamed by like three Stark decks. So, you know, there's that, and, you know, combination of Stark decks and awkward draws on my part, had several games where I just was not drawing locations. You kind of need some of that gas. Particular low light for me, I think, being it was my round 4 or 5 match against a Stark attrition deck that at least like 3 different turns like in a row, I kept thinking, you know what, I had a good draw, played back down, like I'm into this game, I've got my mace, I've got my high guard, whatever, you know, to keep going. And he wiped 4 characters off of my board, 3 turns in a row. Oof. And that was just too much attrition, just too much to keep up with. It was brutal. So, you know, when he's got, 2 claim and draws into all 3 Winter is Coming, plus, what's his name? The Bolton Flayer, like a lot to keep up with. So that was probably.
Not gonna weather that storm.
That was probably my most memorable single game out of the Joust, other than maybe my round 2 game when I was, you know, up at the top of the standings. There was streamed, though I gather part of the stream went in and out, so I don't know how much people actually got to see of that. That was against Andrus, one of my losses against Stark, and I know. Turn 1, he wound up putting my old town to the torch.
Yes.
And he was asking after the game if that was the right call. And I had to tell him that I do really think it was, because it really stunted my draw. I basically drew no locations after that for the rest of the game. So, you know, that extra little bit of draw might have gotten me into something I needed. So I very much feel that was the right angle of attack.
Part of the reason he asked you that question, I can tell you, Will, he wanted to have your answer on stream about that in order to kind of stick it to James Anthony about the put to the torch issue we had with our team. He's like, I want this answer on
stream.
Well,
there you go. Hopefully that was recorded for posterity. I do think he made the right call. Okay, I guess that probably sends us to Jesse. How'd you do? What'd you play?
I played Gradual Wars to Come. It was a variation of the deck I played. I took third with Lord of the Crossing the week before. It was a deck that several people had a hand in. Wama, Izian, myself, Darknaj. I've been a big Drown God fan for a long time. Roy Glazer, all the Lances, we had a hand in it. I brought it with a few different guys. I probably had the most reps with it. Started out a good day. I started out 4-0. It was just too fast for people. It wasn't that it was – so it is very surprisingly fast, but it was just that I played Uneasy Truce. So I'd play Uneasy Truce, and they would still do challenges, which would give me power. And then by the time they realized it was just too late, it was like, well, I'm going to win in Marshalling next turn. And like, I never lost a game where I wildfired into a Daharis. Like, that was the nut play. Like, if I can wildfire you on your Daharis, on like, if you're Daharising me, if you're VDing me and I can call the wildfire, it's just, it's the best feeling in the world. Cause I need my things dead, obviously. So yeah, I started 4-0, then I played a really, really tight game against Eric Green playing Tyrell Dragon. He nightmares my old Wick. I was at 14. I had to do a power challenge to win. And he nightmares my old Wick to win. Yeah, it was a really, really close game. So I lost like 15-14. And then I played Dustin. It was just not a game at all. I didn't see pieces.
Yeah, poor.
He saw three I Am No Ones in the first two plots. Sansa, Septim Ordain. He saw dupes. My Valor was dead.
Yeah.
I mean, it was really bad. Like, I couldn't do anything. Round seven, I played another Stark Crossing, and I crushed it to make the cut. I didn't get a bye. So first round I played Nick Hansen, played Stark Reigns, and I beat him pretty handedly. He set up No Save Arya, which scared me because I was scared of my, cause like, I don't usually care what dies, but if my Tarl dies and my Aaron Dampair dies, it's pretty rough. I don't have a way to come back. So I beat him, though, and then top 16, I played Booker, which that was not a game at all. It was really rough for him. I evinced his Aegon, I evinced his Kotho, and then I evinced his Aegon again. I saw all three evinces. It was not a good game. And then, of course, top 8, I ran into our national champion here again, and it might have been worse than the first time, honestly.
You got Naga's Ribs this time, at least.
So, turn one, I had some pieces, but he had, after round one of play, he had duped Great John, Sansa, Arya, a single Catelyn, and an Eddard. I was like, cool. He puts the torch in my ribs, round one, and it was over from there. I couldn't do anything. He didn't make mistakes, though, so it was nice watching the rest of his run there. But yeah, so I made top 8. I made top 8 at Gen Con. I was kind of hoping to do a little bit better at Nats. I felt a little bit better about the Drown God deck than I did Tyrell. It did not come to fruition, but I was happy with my performance. I was happy with my play. I don't think in the games I lost, I don't think I misplayed. I mean, everyone misplays, but I don't think I like made any drastic misplays or anything. I just think I lost a crossing. So I was really pleased with the performance, with the competition and everything. It was good. It was fun. I had a really good time. But yeah, I think that's it.
All right. Dustin, how'd your day go?
Well, that first day, I mean, both days, yeah. They went well, they went real well. That first game was a buy. You know, my big four-person regional down here in Texas, because we have so many players down here. So that was fun. Round two went up against the Greyjoy Stag, Dakota Bowen. Very nice guy. He had a good setup, but I was able to play Ward T1, and that really just kind of wrecked his board. He didn't have saves or anything, so I was just able to run on top of him. Round three was against that Eric Green Tyrell Dragon deck. I love playing against Eric. He's a great player. He's a fun guy. Tyrell Dragon had just beat Austin's deck, which is a very similar version of Star Crossing that I was running. Tyrell Dragon deck had beat his at Lord of the Crossing, so that Austin took second. That was Bryn, right? Bryn that won Lord of the Crossing?
Bryn Alcorn.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, thank you. That's
the decks were like 35 cards different.
Yeah, they were pretty different. They're pretty different, but yeah. But Tyrell Dragon in general, I mean, it's a solid deck concept. You know, Queen's Guard and everything. And Aegon and you know, Renly's Host. And I knew that if I wasn't able to kind of pull that off turn one and control the board, that I was going to lose it. And I did. He was, you know, it was kind of demoralizing losing that third game that day. So I was like, all right, that's fine. We'll just keep going. And then went into round four against Alejandro with his Martell Wars. The only reason I won that game is because he made quite a few mistakes. I was very lucky to pull it off. He got a good reset on me when I was trying to kind of just finish the game instead of trying to play it safe and do some King in the North, which was unfortunate. So, it worked out well for him, but in the end, I still won it because a couple play mistakes that he made. Round five, Jim Hansen, Night's Watch Crossing. I love playing against Jim. He comes up with great decks. He was second place at Nationals last year. Very, very, very good player. And I like Night's Watch Crossing. It was a very interesting deck. I was able to keep control from early on. Greyjohn is a good card, I hear, and I kept getting it early on in pretty much every game. And that's, I mean, running three of, you're more likely to see it, but still, it was almost every game. And he did a lot of work there. Jesse already talked about our game for round six. You know, I beat him on that one. I won't keep belaboring that one. And then round seven, it was me and Andras, and we brought the exact same deck. So it was first to Greyjohn wins, and he had duped Greyjohn, and I had won Greyjohn. So he won that one. It didn't take very long either.
I'm noticing a trend.
So was that
not taking long? Yeah,
games don't take long. Yes.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, you know, this deck, it doesn't have. Well, and that one was more because I conceded because I knew there was no chance of me pulling it back out. I could have kept it going to round, you know, six, round seven, but it wasn't worth it. And a lot of these games, you know, a couple of them were early-ish concedes, but the deck is made to be able to rush it out if you have the right pieces. But if you don't have them, it can go to more mid-game. And we, I'm trying to think if we actually saw that in any of the games. I think most of them were done by round three when we went into the cut. So, going into the cut, I had that round one bye for that top 24 set of a top 24 cut. So I started off against Daryl Weber with his Night's Watch Wars builders and the flares, Bolton flares, and Put to the Torch really, really, you know, shone in this deck. It was one of the things that we had teched against was Night's Watch Wars and Drowned God, because I knew both of them were going to make a pretty solid showing. Putting his Brandon's Gift to the Torch was huge. Breaking Ties, his Econ Chud, was huge. It kept him from flooding the board. It kept that board low, kept his wall knelt, and just ran on top of him on that one. Like Jesse said, go ahead, Jesse. Sorry.
Let's be clear that Daryl's from Alney. He's been my best friend for like ever.
He was awesome.
Two people nice. From Alney were in the cut.
All two people from
his
Alney.
His builder's deck was also his builder's deck was spicy. It ran Valor M. It ran Superior Claims. It ran Thorn Smallwoods. It was spicy.
Yeah, he played a Superior Claim early on, and I was actually. I don't know if it was the right play for him because it let me steal more power from him and let me get it.
Yeah.
Well, because because I kept keeping his wall knocked down, and he didn't expect that, which I totally understand. So he needed to get some power flowing. But it was also gave me the power to steal from him. So it let me end it a little bit faster. But I liked his deck. I mean, I can see how it would definitely work if he had a chance to set up, but I didn't really give him that.
Sure.
So, top eight, Jesse, you know, he talked about it already with the Drowned God deck again. Seeing him a second time, when I saw his Naga's Ribs come out, I'm going, oh, crap, he's getting some of his pieces. But I was able to get that torch off, and then I hit a poor Drowned God fanatic for my intrigue claim. So that doesn't help at all either. Top four went up against Matthew Phillips, who is, you know, he's a good player. He was playing Bera Alliance Rose Cohort, which is actually my second deck I was considering bringing, and I tested it for almost a month straight, so I had a good idea of what it was doing. And he played it well. Unfortunately, Randall, with lots of attachments, is susceptible to breaking ties without any dupes. And yeah, it was rough for him on that one, but I did have to use a Rob in order to hit his Randall because he had hit my Summer with Heads on Spikes the same turn I played Breaking Ties. So I had to go about using Breaking Ties legitimately.
That's a big trade.
So, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was good, though. I mean, it worked out for me. I had a lot of good stuff on the board at the time. You know, I had Wyman, I had Great John, I had all kinds of good stuff. So it was definitely worth it. It brought his board back down, got rid of a ton of his attachments. The only mistakes I really feel that I made in the cut was actually just not noticing that he had a tourney lance on Randall when he didn't have a knighted on him. And that was, yeah, entirely my mistake. He was just so used to having, like, Randall be a knight that I think he forgot it's not, like, an inherent trait, and so did I. So I totally get it. But, yeah, after that Breaking Ties, that was huge. I Am No One on Sansa, you know, helped finish off that game. I Am No One on Sansa is just amazing through and through. And ended up ending it with an I Am No One on Arya at the end of the game too. So, and then the last game was Stark Fealty against AJ. And I'd heard that it was a kill deck. I heard that, you know, some of his main cards, you know, I heard about the ice getting, you know, shot off three times against the Night's Watch Crossing with Jim Hansen in the top four. That was crazy to hear about, but I had no idea what plots he was running. So I didn't feel super comfortable going into it. But you know, I was able to ride that knife's edge. You can read the tournament report on ThronesDB. But that razor's edge, man, I was on it the whole time. I figured he had ward when he had ward. I figured he had the winners coming turn one, which would have really, really screwed my board. And I made those calls. I thought he might play marched turn two. So I played forced march and was able to keep that initiative with Great John and do what I could. And at the very end was my favorite play of the day, which was I Am No One on Catelyn in order to go in with Greyjohn to kneel down some of his board and finish the game with the rest of the challenges. So I Am No One and wait, off to Goldtown. Sorry, I meant to say off to Goldtown.
I was about
to
say, I Am No One on Catelyn?
I was
a little worried.
No. Off to Goldtown. Off to Goldtown MVP, definitely of the day.
That's awesome. I think off to Goldtown.
So, yeah, that's everything. That's a whole lot of stuff.
Okay. Well, let's broaden it up then. What did you guys think about the field as a whole? Were there any trends that you saw that surprised? Was it pretty much what you expected? I will admit, after the, you know, really pretty close win of Martell at Gen Con, I was expecting a bit more copycatting, but I think the UK and Lord of the Crossing and stuff kind of sent people other directions much faster than I was kind of used to seeing, so I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. What were you saying, Jesse?
I definitely wasn't expecting like more Martell or control or passive or anything like that. I was just expecting crossing. Like, it's the most busted deck in the game. Like, people are going to play it. It doesn't, like, people should play it. Like, I talk about how much I hate it, which I do, but it's because I don't like Rush. Like, people should play it because it doesn't, it, like, I believe it's one of the easiest decks to play. Like, there's not a ton of, like, I think there are great pilots that play crossing. I'm not trying to take away anything from pilots who play crossing, because I think they're the best pilots that made the best decisions. Like, I'm very close to Jim Hansen. He always plays crossing. He's one of the best players in the world. He could play other stuff. He just chooses to play crossing because it's the best deck. Like, Dustin is a good pilot who chose the best deck. So he won. Like, but I always expect crossing because middle level players to lower level players can make the cuts and take down big tournaments with crossing because it just beats decks. Like, it doesn't take anything to be like intrigue, military power, superior claim, relentless assault. Cool. I win. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's what I always expect at tournaments. Like, honestly, it's what I've expected for a long time. Even like a lot of the Wars to Come builds are just Rush that's decks. True. So.
Yeah, I really agree with Jesse. I think crossing really mitigates variance, and it also overcomes play mistakes because it is such a crutch. But it is the best.
I don't know that I would call choice. It a crutch.
If you want to win, it is the
I
best
think it's
option.
Oppressive.
It is a little bit for a suboptimal build or a suboptimal player. It can be a crutch.
I think there.
I'm not
great.
Saying inherently
yeah, sure,
it's a
okay.
crutch. I'm just saying
sure,
that
that's
it can
fair.
Be.
That's fair. Okay. Like, I think that I am going to throw. I'm going to throw such a fucking major party when Lord of the Crossing rotates out. Like, I cannot wait. Like, I'm going to lose Iron Minds, Nightmares, Nymeria, Gregor. Like, I'm going to lose all these cards that I like, but I swear to God, the Lord of the Crossing leaves, I'm going to throw a fucking party. Sorry about my language, Will. I'm usually good about it, but I cannot wait. Like, oh, it'll be great.
Do you think there's any chance that it's become so ubiquitous that it might get restricted?
It should be. I mean, like, the issue is, like, people think about restricted lists. Like, we've never had a restricted list. We've had two answers to
where's
OTK combos. We've never gotten a restricted list. So why would we get one now? Like, that's my question. Like, I want one really badly. It would fix a lot of things. I took Mason Hightower to Gen Con. It should be restricted. Dorne and Secret Schemes. It should be restricted. Like, I feel like I need Glazer on this call right now. Like, Lord of the Crossing and Heads on Spikes, they should be restricted. They should not be allowed to be played together. Like, it's ridiculous. But, I mean, I still...
Let alone being able to double them up.
Right?
I totally agree.
I mean, I'm not taking away, like, I never want to sound negative about the game. I think the game is in a good place. And I think, like, it is mostly just me being biased because I don't like Rush. I don't think it's creative. I don't think it's inherently like skill intensive, and it bothers me that it just rolls the meta. But like, until it's restricted,
thing,
people
right?
should play
if
it.
You restrict both of those two. Exactly.
But I don't think
it'll
that...
still be a viable option, even if you restrict Heads on Spikes and
Lords
of the Crossing.
Oh,
it's
absolutely.
Still a viable option, and it will still win in the hands of a good pilot. So I don't think it in any way will negate the Rush presence in the meta. It will just neuter it to the point where you can be creative and you don't have to just say, okay, I know I'm getting rolled by
one of the only decks you're really going to hit. One of the only decks you're really going to hit with restricting Lord of the Crossing and Heads on Spikes is going to be the Landing Crossing, though. I haven't seen many other Lord of the Crossing decks that are doing well running one or two Heads on Spikes.
The Targ deck does it. That one UK and
you could probably do those two and Superior Claim, though.
But is it really that, like, Rush is that OP, or is this in a position where aggro and control haven't gotten the cards they need to balance out the meta? I mean, I look at the Rush cards, and I don't go, wow, like, how does one conquer this? I think back to a lot of first ed cards. I'm like, if I had this right now, Rush is not a problem. If I had this right now, Rush is not a problem. I think you can design it out.
Sure, but you're also saying 1.0, and they used to do that all the time for cards that were ubiquitous. They didn't care about the fact that it, whether it was OP or not. They just said, is everybody playing this one card? Okay, right. It's not happening anymore.
Yes. I mean, it's just...
Yeah, they did
it's really about where Danny's at from a what does he want the point of a restricted list to be. I mean, at the same time, like, I know we're sitting here going, like, Crossing needs to go, but we did the same thing with Wars to Come, what, 2 months ago, 3 months ago? I'm not, I dislike both agendas for the same reason. I think they're bland and efficient, so good players are like, well, I like winning, so I'm going to run these, but I don't feel great about what I'm doing with my cardboard.
Yeah.
And I dislike both for that reason, but...
I mean, to a certain...
But I'm saying, like, there was a clamor for it.
The design justified the other agendas, right? Like, I think there's a pretty wild power drop-off with virtually all the rest of the agendas.
True. So, I think, hopefully, it's a design space thing that'll fix this. I mean, I talked about it a lot, like, the meta... is just in a place where Jesse said, where, like, if you want to do well and you're good, run Crossing, run Rush, because that's the archetype that's dominating. And when the, and not just dominating, like, and then it's good, but it's also popular. So if other people are playing Rush, you don't have to worry so much. I mean, if Builders was still really big, like, no one's going to play Rush because you're going to literally run into a wall and it's going to shit on you. But I mean, there was, what, two Builders, three Builders decks at Nationals, despite it doing, I thought, very well, like, overperforming for its population. Just the meta is shifted in such a way where these threats aren't something you have to run into. There's a good shot you don't, and you can just punch your way to a top cut, and then it's anybody's game. So I think, hopefully...
Well, and so, along that same line...
No, I just think, hopefully, like... with new cards that shifts. I think a lot of top players, you know, like Jesse talks about it, like are naturally inclined towards control. And I think as soon as control viable builds start popping up, that the meta can self-correct rather quickly. But we need those cards. Without those cards, you're right. Jesse's right. Like, you're an idiot if you're not pushing this.
So, and I agree with that because, I mean, a lot of it is a meta call. You know, we were, you know, one of the things, two of the things that really destroyed our deck, Stark Crossing, was burn, you know, Pyro Danny, burn, you lose. Stark Crossing cannot handle that, not the version that we were running. There really wasn't, you know, you got a couple of brands, you've got Catelyn, but there's still other challenges where you're going to get yourself burned down. And you're not always going to have those cards either. So we found that that would really hamper us, but we didn't expect to see it at Nationals hardly at all. Most Targ was, yeah, because, you know,
it can't be Tyrell.
Right. Well, it can't be Tyrell, and Tyrell was popular there for a while, but we didn't expect to see a ton of Tyrell either. And I don't think there really was that much Tyrell. You know, you had some Tyrell Dragon, you had a little bit of what, some Tyrell Wars. I think there's still a couple of decks of that, if I remember right. I have to go back and look. But we had planned on more Rush decks, which we were hoping to be able to either outrush or control them. We were expecting Builders. We were expecting Drowned God. You know, we weren't expecting a lot of attrition and control because those take a lot longer. And in a tournament setting like this, the pressure's on, the time is on, and people are typically, from what I've seen, less inclined to bring attrition specifically. And, you know, just generally want to end the game faster, and that was part of
I don't believe the clock figures into it. I don't think you can make the town round times an hour and a half, and I don't think control would have been any more popular than it is now. Maybe like really really degenerate Martell, maybe, but they akin to what we saw when Gen Con or like Builders, but that
or Builders.
No, Builders, everyone knows how good Builders is. People do not play Builders because they don't want to play Builders. That is the only reason. Like, that is the only reason. Like, Builders has been a tier one deck since the Night's Watch box dropped a year and a half ago. Like, it just, people don't want to
play
it.
No, I mean, no. You're
scared about that.
I really think
no, not in America.
To go ahead and give your opponent that full win. You get nothing out of the mod loss. Nothing at all. So. There's a ton of people that, yeah, that just
go ahead, it only hurts you to
do
that.
Them the full win.
Missouri is the
only... Yeah, most people...
Yeah, I don't think mod wins.
To their credit, Missouri is the only place I know that preaches the mod win. The only place. So I was a little concerned about it down there. But
if you do that on the West Coast or on the East Coast or in the like or like my neck of the woods, like you get shamed at the tournament if you give a mod win.
I jumped down the throat at first player to someone, a local. I mean, and I was nice about it, but he was a new guy and he comes from Will's Tree, which means lawful good, paladins all the way. And he's like, I was at like 14 and he was at 11 and they're like time. And I was like, hey man, I like explained it to him. He's like, but you didn't get to 15. Like that was the only sentence. Like he couldn't comprehend why he would do it. I mean, and I'm like, dude,
I would have lost my mind.
I give Will a lot of shit. I was nice to that guy, but I get a lot of
shit. I would not fault anyone for that. It's within the rules for them to stick to it. But I would definitely say community kind of perception has very much shifted from when mod wins were first added to the game. And I would say they've definitely convinced me now that they've, at this point, removed mod losses quite some time ago, that it's not beneficial to you to be a stickler on that. They've also removed the penalty.
Well, and since I brought it up, I just want to quickly comment and say that shows how out of touch that I am, and that's why I made the comment I did, because I just am unaware
of
that.
I would say it's changed.
Pulse of the social, like, aspect of things.
At one point, wasn't there a penalty for concessions?
Yeah,
like,
so
if you conceded a game, like they took it as like a drop from the tournament or something that was just like wildly disproportionate for a while.
No,
I mean
it only hurt people who were.
Yeah, really it might have been right at the tail end of first ed, and that's I think when.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. When people
just to discourage idiots from scooping,
it was really brief
about you know, a mod win's a mod win, that sort of thing. But they've since removed that, and then now that they've also removed mod losses, there's just zero incentive. The system now disincentivizes anything other than a concession if it goes to time.
Yeah, the moment we got rid of mod losses, we should have got rid of mod wins. Like, especially because you have to know it's so prevalent that the only people you're hurting are the people trying to do the right thing. Like, the only people that are getting screwed here are, like, new players or people that are just so, like, upright. They're like, yeah, this is the right thing to do because they don't know any better. Like, you're not hurting anyone that's jockeying to make a cut.
Or that person wants to be a dick. Like, there's also that.
Yeah, now it opens because the norm has become to do it, to slow play, and then nail down the mod win. So,
right, that's always
it's just created a stupid situation and needs to go away.
Now, if you're like competing metas, you could see that happening, right? Like, if you're one group and you know that you're going to pull down somebody from another group.
Yeah. But
I could see that being a thing.
Oh, you're saying like an overall tournament strategy?
Yeah.
I've never been a team or hive mind player. Well, no, I'm just saying like if you all built decks together and you came and you played it and you're playing against another group's player that you know all built decks together, you might push for that mod because you're going to hurt their strength schedule, etc. But, you know, I've never been one to play as a team, so I don't know.
Yeah,
I play as a team, and I still would never give a mod win.
Yeah, same here, man. Like, I've never played as a team until now. Like, this is real new to me, playing with Storm Bros. But I don't think any of them or I would ever do that. Like, it's just, it's shame, man. Shame.
There are people I would mod win.
I'm nowhere trying to call anybody out. I'm just saying I could see why it would come into some of the stuff.
I totally get what you're saying.
Like, that's the only time that it would be advantageous
Absolutely right. Hopefully teams aren't that shitty.
I would definitely try to, if I'm like
losing,
just
get rid of it
and like they call the end of the round, there are people I'm sticking that mod went on. Now, granted, I think they're terrible people or we have beef outside of this game. So it's a nice moment to like be like, hey, I'm going to be real petty right now.
Kyle.
But in general, no. If I don't know you and it's not a, I would do it regardless, then I wouldn't.
That's horrible.
It's understandable. Well, we went a lot further down the mod loss concession so on sort of track than I was kind of expecting. does anyone else have any thoughts on the field at whole before we move on to the other tournaments and then come back around to kind of a weekend recap, pluses and minuses at the tail end of that? Or do we have anything else on Joust?
Okay.
The one last thing for Joust is Jesse, as I mean, I think Tommy and I both admitted, had very little pulse on the meta going into this tournament. But as the other person who really did, what were your thoughts? Like, what were you expecting going into this and your strategy deck building wise? Just, I think that's something that a lot of new players struggle with. So if you could just talk about what were you expecting and what did you do to combat that?
Who were you asking, Jesse, this question?
Right? You got to give a name, Kyle. Give a name.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Justin already did it.
Oh, okay.
Jesse.
So first and foremost, I always go into a tournament wanting to play something that I think is cool, which I don't think is the correct direction for most new players unless you want to have fun. But usually winning is fun. So that's my first decision. And then we try to like, and then like being on a team kind of balances that out, because I'll think a lot of like, I really like aggro a lot, like a ton. And it's just not where it needs to be. So I'm like usually convinced to play something else. So like at Gen Con, we decided to play the Tyrell because it was passive power. And like, so I usually try to play something, because I don't like Rush. So usually I try to play something that either beats Rush or can compete with Rush. So I'll go into it with that mindset that I make the meta call, and then I never usually take the deck that I think is the meta call. I usually take something that I think can beat it. So at Gen Con, I thought Stark was the meta call, so we took Tyrell because Tyrell beats Stark. At Nats, I took Drown God because I thought Stark Crossing was the meta call, and even though I lost to it twice and beat it twice, like I still think it's a pretty positive matchup for me. Because they have to do military challenges, which we kind of negate that. The issue is the I Am No Ones we were worried about, but maybe I could have looked back and put in the Enhanced Judgments. It's the stealth. It's giving up the unopposed that's the problem. And then, like, they made the correct meta call by playing Puts of the Torch. Like, that wasn't in those decks before. Like, in the original build that I sent to Ibri months ago, that he's tweaked, and then I've tweaked, and CT tweaked, and all of us have tweaked, like, we never put Puts of the Torches in there. I promise you that. So, like, that was the correct meta call by them. Like, when that got played against me in both games,
I love hearing you say that, buddy. I love hearing you say that.
Like, when things like that, even in decks that I, no offense, despise, when I see things like that as a deck builder, and I take pride in deck building, and when I see things like that, it makes me very happy. Like, when I got my ribs blown up, it sucked, but I was like, wow. Out of Stark Crossing, that's a good call. Like, that was impressive. So, but that's kind of like a look into my mindset. Like, I usually have a deck decided the week before. I'm not usually one of those people who like goes to a tournament and decides the night before. It's just not my style. There have been several champions who have done that. But I'm just someone who I like to have. I usually play decks that require like, I don't know, 17 triggers in marshaling phase. So I usually have to have reps with those to, be able to remember those triggers. But yeah, it was between that and the Tark Crossing, and I don't play Tark Crossing. So I think the Tark Crossing can beat Stark Crossing. I think it's a good matchup for it, actually. So that's why you and Sandy took that, and Sandy got top 16, right?
I think so. I didn't have the breakdown right in front of me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kicked my ass, but that's for
top
sure.
Eight, he took top 8 at UK Nats, and he top 16 that, so. Schoenthal was deciding the day before, and he decided to take the Drowned God. It didn't work out for him, unfortunately. But, yeah, I think I don't know exactly. Like, I'm trying to think about my thought process before I was on a team, like how I looked at tournaments and how I made the meta call and stuff like that. Then I realized my performances were not that great. So, like, being on a team helps, I would say. Or, like, even if you're not on a team, like, I implore, like White Book listeners, if you're not on a team and say you're in a meta that, you know, like, you guys don't work as a team or, like, you don't build as a team or things like that, like, reach out to some prominent members in the community. Like, there are several of us who do not mind helping you out. Like,
for sure.
You can ask anyone. If anyone asks me for a deck, I'll give it to them. I don't care. I want to help people do well. And if you don't have the luxury of being on a team, like, talk to people. Like, I'll walk you through deck lists. I'll walk you through my mindset or how I think. Like, I know Darknaj will do the same. I know Chris Thompson will do the same. I know, like, Glazer will do the same. Like, I'm sure Andres and Dustin will do the same. Like, there's so many people out there. Like, people think Wasow is like this offhand. They're just shy guys. If you hit up any of them, they will talk your ears off about Thrones. Now, you will wonder why they're playing what they're playing, but, like, I'm just saying, like, I implore you guys, if you're nervous about a big tournament, don't just go in net deck. Like, please, I am so against that. Like, I am. Don't go just go in net deck. Talk to someone about the interactions within the deck. Like, talk to someone. I implore you, because once you get a better understanding of the deck and how it works, then you can put your own spin on it to fit your own playstyle, and then you will start seeing better performances.
And I think along with that,
all of us had something there.
Well, and that's your first step.
Go ahead, guys.
What's up?
Go ahead, Dustin.
Okay, so what I was going to say is with the net decking, I agree to an extent. I think net decking can be detrimental if they have no idea what they're really doing with it. That said, if somebody publishes decks and they give a good detailed explanation of how it's played and, like, what interactions matter and, like, when to do certain things, I think then it's okay to net deck, because you're getting that, you're not getting as good of an interaction as, like, talking to somebody and working through the deck, which I totally agree. Please reach out to players. You know, this will help you as a player, and it'll help us too, because we want to, you know, be able to have one better competitions, you know, playing against strong players. That's fun. But also it helps us think about the decks a little bit more and makes us, you know, critically analyze specific cards and interactions. But if it's a good write-up, then net decking, you know, you're going to be able to perform pretty well with it. You're getting kind of just a slightly paler version of that interaction with somebody who built a deck.
I mean,
that's really similar to what I was going to say. I was going to say that net decking or doing anything without context is the worst thing that you could possibly do. A great deck with no context is just going to confuse you. But if you're a new player and you get a great deck and great write-up or context from another player, that's just going to give you the impetus to go and build your own decks in the future. It's the gateway drug. If you understand great card interactions and strategy on developing a cost curve and how to make your plots fit with what you're trying to do in your draw deck, that will lead to your ability to build a deck of your own, which is the ultimate goal, I think, for most people. I mean, some people just want to be pilots, and I get that. But I think part of the fun of a game like this is making your own decks.
So, and I know that I'm in the massive minority about this, and I'll speak on it for just a minute, and then we can move on. Well, is that I do not agree with publishing lists. I don't publish lists. And, you know, and I hear arguments for it the other side, and, like, I definitely understand and I get it and I'm all for it. But, like, I think that people totally undervalue their own playstyle. Like, I can take a Stark Crossing and I can do fine with it, but if I just add a couple things to fit my own personal playstyle and how I select plots or how I determine to do my challenges, like, I don't think there's a perfect deck in Thrones outside of OTK combos. I think that like we were just talking, like Kyle was a top tier player and he took a top tier deck and he went 2-5 at US Nats. Like, that doesn't make sense to me because it didn't it makes sense because it didn't fit his playstyle. Like if he would have tweaked it and got reps,
I think it comes back to that, so reps, like, or at least an offshoot of that, right? Like if you've got the reps in that deck, if you net decked it, even, you know, you get the reps, you find out if it matches your play style or not, right? You're gonna keep playing the stuff.
Sure.
That does match.
I kind of agree with Jesse though, right?
What's that?
I mean,
even if you pour a ton of reps into something that's just not your natural inclination, like, you're going to eventually run into a situation where you're going to pull a different trigger,
right?
The way that your mind works.
That's what I meant by
that's reps part in. Of making
yeah,
it
get those reps in, you find out whether it fits you or not. There's some give and take, like, and not that, just that you're grinding perfection,
for sure.
But you're also finding out if you and the deck are a fit when you get those reps in.
There's also the whole thing that, like, how do we want to view this game? Do you want to view it as fun or do you want to view it as competitive? Because if you view it as only competitive, then publishing deck lists makes no sense because then it just gives pilots a crutch. I'm just being honest.
Well,
like, if you view it as fun, then publishing is everywhere. Then it should be everywhere. But, like, I believe talking to a lot of these old 1.0 players where, like, publishing deck lists was a lot less prevalent, like it still happened, but it was a lot less prevalent, and you would actually show up to tournaments and you would see decks that you didn't know. Now, do you ever show up at a 2.0 tournament? How often do you show up at a 2.0 tournament and at the top tables do you ever see a deck that you're just like, oh wow, that blows my mind, I've never seen that? You just expect it.
I mean,
right?
Varying levels of up or down, you know, like, I mean, look at how many people were or were not expecting your Drown God list, for instance. I think it was not widely expected. Now, there was a subset of people that were in tune, like, because they're part of that in-the-know crowd that talk to each other. Like, there's something to be said for large groups but low sharing. Privileging and advantaging the folks in those groups, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, that just goes to make connections and talk to more people, right? You know? Like, so that you've got that basis.
Yeah. Sure. That makes sense.
Well, and I think part of it, too, also comes down to...
I definitely don't know that I'm right. No,
yeah,
you're good.
I can be argued.
Part of it comes down to just... to how much you're playing too. Like, for instance, I see a lot of decks, but that's because I'm playing approximately 20-25 hours per week on Iron Throne. Now, I'm not saying Iron Throne's competitive.
Oh my god.
You do see a lot of decks. Yeah. I play a lot, guys. I mean, I give myself about 5 hours of sleep a night. So I typically play about 5 hours a day.
Jeez. I'm jealous, frankly.
Yeah.
I play 2 hours a week. I mean, like, if I'm playing in person, if I'm grinding games with Daryl or something, like, I'll play, if I have a day off, I'll play from like 10 in the morning to like 2 or 3 in the morning. Like, I'll grind all day long in person. Like, CT and I will just grind, but like on the computer, I play my 2 online games a week. And then I don't really play online other than that.
Well,
unless it's like the week before a big tournament.
Right. Well, and
I just don't like
Iron Throne in general.
You try to play what?
Oh, I play against a lot of randoms for a while there on Iron Throne. But then what we'll do is, like, Andres and I, for instance, we'll test against each other using some decks that we think might be out there, some interesting decks, and we'll just put a deck through its paces. And we'll try and get in, you know, 10 games a night or something if we can, leading up to a big tournament.
Yeah, I'm tired of thinking about it. Like, I don't want to
10 games a night.
I wish I had that luxury.
It's like that's like Glazer style numbers right there. Yeah, you must have a super cool wife, Dustin.
That's true. And a very low threat.
We have our own things, man. She is pretty awesome.
Well, maybe that one is a natural breaking point to keep rolling.
I think that's the one we should cut.
Really good discussion that led some directions I was not expecting here in the Joust discussion. But we've also blown an hour of the podcast and have like 2.5 tournaments still to cover. So let's see what we can do on this front.
We don't have to cover the road.
Well, we need to at least acknowledge that. No, I mean, that one's the hat.
Yes. I actually want to talk about the 1.0, not the rookery.
We've got at least a couple interesting things to cover with each of those, but we've got a little bit to cover with melee at first. So how about we head that direction? Now, due to their strong performance, neither Jesse nor Dustin played in melee. So I apologize if this one
don't talk to me
leaves you a little high and dry. If you have questions to grill the folks that did play. Feel free. Aside from that, I guess it felt good.
Was it awesome?
I loved it.
Oh yeah, I bet.
Everybody was having a good time and was like, "God, do it at all of my tables." Like, you know, they were taking it seriously in that everyone wanted to win, but they weren't taking it so seriously that they were holding grudges. It felt like
oh, it was super good. And Jesse handed me. I have to thank him 1,000 times over. I think this is one of those moments, and he brought up good points talking about Joust. It's like Kyle got reps with the deck and shoved a square peg into a round hole and it flopped. Where this was the exact opposite. He's like, here's this deck that just has like soft synergies and you just kind of play patty cake with everyone. And then after you talk to them for 20 minutes, you win. And I was like, oh my God, like, like my wife doesn't talk that dirty runs weekends. Like,
love it.
It was a nice time. Was so good.
So what was it, at least in the broad strokes, if you guys don't want to give away all of Jesse's secret sauce?
No, I don't care. It's HRD High Garden. It's played like every single standard or move you could possibly imagine.
Nice.
Marjorie's Influence, Queen of the Seven Kingdoms, Sept and Hysterica, High Garden, Offer of a Peach. You played the whole win con was just like flopping Queen of Thorns, then kneeling her, going getting all your all men are fools, getting it off in one turn. Like, but you're just like, you're not like oppressively winning. You're just like controlling where challenges go, how they go. Just kind of hanging out and just making deals all
yeah,
day.
Yeah, you're involved in
it's a fun
everything.
Deck. I really, really, really wanted to play it. Oh,
it was
God.
Definitely the highlight. I mean, just your
it was a lot different.
Yeah,
you can talk about
how'd the day go for you.
Sorry,
give us as much of a rundown of
Oh, how much can I remember? I mean, Jesse's right on the description, and I think it's a fact that when you're melee building, you need to really look for, and that are cards that can affect other players and multiple other players that, because of their wording, break the traditional 1v1 frame. So like High Garden is like, remove a character. It doesn't have to be mine. It doesn't have to be someone attacking me. It can be any challenge and any character on the board. And that is a very powerful like niche to look for when you're building these decks. And this deck just went all in on that. So I think I had 2 second places and a win on the day. I think I came in 8th. But I mean, it was just, and it makes for a better experience having cards like that because you're involved all the time. There's not a single challenge that you can't be involved in. So, and that's one of the like tough feelings.
And it slowed the game
down.
Yeah,
it slows the game down. The biggest frustration I hear a lot of people talk about with Melee is that they hate it when dumb people make mistakes that they can't affect or control. Like, oh, well, the idiot next to me did XYZ, totally let that other dude win because, like, he didn't see whatever. Well, this allows me, because of all my negotiating power, I can make deals and influence the table. But on top of that, I have card effects that if I need to, I can take those challenges into my own hands. Be like, okay, I realize you're being dumb and going to let this go unopposed because you're an idiot, but I'm going to take his Knight of Flowers out of this so that he doesn't get like 8 power here. So it was really rewarding to be able to affect both the soft aspects of the game with talking and to have physical card interactions that could allow me to have real impact when I needed it. And the two together were super effective. I think I had double digit power in all my tables. The one game I won, I think we valored 3 times and I still got through it. That game was stupid. But like the deck's not very threatening. You just kind of, like he said, you keep some pieces out and it's like, yeah, I'm in this. You don't have any characters that really scare anyone. And then it's Queen of Thorns and it's over. I mean, you just, it's so fast when you need it to. But until that point, everyone's having fun. Everyone's having a good time. And you win so quick, no one has time to hate you or react.
And the plot line is sick.
Yeah. And again, nothing, yeah. Plot line is nothing, there. Offensive plots to slow it down, uneasy truce, stuff that's really fun in melee, but again, things that let you negotiate and nothing that's gonna piss anyone off. It's not like Valor. Like, people run Valor in melee and I've never understood it, because now you've upset everyone at the table, you have 0 claim and no gold.
Yeah,
so unless you're running a deck that hinges on that moment, it's no good. It's, you've already lost if you're Valoring. Part of why I think I won.
I've never seen someone Valor in the States. I've never seen someone Valor in melee.
Yeah, it just doesn't happen.
I hear it's happening in Europe.
I'll disagree with that in one scenario, is if you're aggressively doing it with Greyjoy and all you need is unopposed to win and you have a way to win initiative even though you play the Valor. Well, you can talk about
I mean,
ahead of the tide.
Not even
Head of the Tides existed forever.
Yeah,
you mean Seize the Initiative?
Seize would secure it, but yeah, that also means you have to be sure that you don't need to play anything else that turn because it's probably eating all of your gold for the turn. It's just, I don't know. It is wildly less
for sure
reliable of a way to ensure some unopposed challenges for you in second edition than it was in first ed, for a variety of reasons, from income to duplicates. That's
but
true.
Very that rarely is, does a melee go to 7 plots. So I feel like you're safe packing it.
So that's my kind of spiel for people in melee, and I love the format, and it's so good that like Jesse's here to be like, yay. I think there's actually a lot of, like, Will's always been a big melee guy. Like, this is a rather positive group of hosts to have on, but I love the format. I loved the approach people took. All my tables were positive experiences. I saw all kinds of decks, far more creative than Joust, to be frank.
People,
it was a good time. It really was.
My favorite version of the game,
melee. And you know, I don't want to go like way far down this particular fork, but I would say that melee might potentially be some proof on Jesse's side of the deck sharing argument. Like, there's just not the same level of melee analysis, discussion, reporting, you know, deck posting and such as there is compared to Joust. And so when I sit down at one of these melee tournaments, I don't know what I'm going to see. I always see some like wildly interesting stuff. That I maybe wouldn't have expected before.
For sure.
My last point, and then I'll turn it over to you guys to discuss the final table, which I'm super excited to hear about, is that the other big key to successful melee is it helps when everyone is around the same skill level. If there's an imbalancement, like if you have a new player at a table, it just becomes who can lure the sheep to their side quickest and then exploit
that
them.
That seems flavorful.
And I think it's true. It's totally true. That having our field, having our field be so deep with quality players at nationals helped that, because I don't think there were hardly any newbies in the room. I think everyone took it around the same level of seriousness, was prepared, knew the cards. I don't think I had a single table where I had someone who had never seen like Tyrell do its thing before. Like they're like, hey, he's got a lot of ladies out. Everyone at the table knew, okay, all men are fools is something we need to watch for. And that was refreshing. So I will say that I think the quality of player at this tournament helped make that melee so good. But yeah, awesome. Overall great experience.
I guess that sends it to me then, since spoiler alert, Tommy won the whole thing. Yeah, well, I was rushing around so much between Scotland and getting everything, Gen Con and getting everything set for Nationals and whatnot, I did not have the chance to build or tweak a new melee deck like I expected to. Instead, I just played literally the same list I played at Gen Con, which had done pretty well for me there as well. And here at Nationals, I won two tables and then got second at the third. So that I think was a good showing. It was in general the same type of deck that I feel most confident with in Melee. That I keep coming back to when I feel like I specifically want to do good in Melee, and that is some variety of Greyjoy unopposed stuff. It's just overall so efficient in Melee when you've got multiple targets to hit, and they all want to, you know, have some give or take, so there's almost always openings. And right now, I think that Rose is the best banner for it to just pick up some additional renown. I'm not going to lie, I definitely stole some tech that I saw Josh Forbes playing in the first player melee. He was actually doing, I believe it was Tyrell Stag, though it might have been Barrow Rose. I forget for sure, but basically... it was Barrow Rose.
It was okay. Barrow Rose.
Basically, he was using Arbor Queen to hand out strength boosts like mad. And of course, you can then use High Garden Courtiers to stand everything. And I thought, well, you know what? Strength boosts already play real well with Balin. And I love standing my people for extra challenges, like, say, a Balin or, I don't know, a Randall Tarly. Asha might stand on her own. Maybe I don't get unopposed. I need to stand her. You know, in general, I feel like this is a good fit. So I went that way, and I do feel good about it. I had also tried to slot in a little bit of Saltcliff Sailor tech, which I have to say underperformed for me at both Gen Con and Nationals. I was not able to use them for anything other than Claim Soak any game between the two tournaments. So those could probably afford to go. Last thought on that deck is Great Kraken, I think, remains my restricted choice there. It's obviously not a surprise, like, say, a Superior Claim or something. But I feel like there's a much greater aggregate power gain out of it if you land it early. Plus the possibility of converting to card draw if you need it, though you usually don't melee. But also the negotiation aspect in challenges and different things, and talking the table early on, like your restricted card is open knowledge that you can point to at any time in the game. And I think that is very valuable when you're talking to other players to really reinforce to them, hey, you know exactly what I can do, what I'm going to be able to do, like the sort of power I can get, because, you know, I don't have other events that are going to muck with that. Am I going to flip a plot next turn that's going to give me extra power after power challenges? Like, you can see and plan for everything here. But what about this dude to my left? Like, that power challenge he's throwing your way that you're thinking about going unopposed, like, that could be a problem. And, so I still think that's my favorite restricted for the deck. Like I said, went well for me. Managed to make the final table. I think I was third in at the end of Swiss, if I remember right. And had a fantastic final table there with Tommy, with Mike, and with Matt. Though I may not recount that table before Tommy gets to it. So I'll go ahead and pass to him.
Okay, so thanks, Will. Appreciate that. Going into this tournament, I had played a grand total of about 6 games of 2.0 Melee. So I really had to educate myself on both the restricted list and the new titles and how they functioned relative to what I was used to with 1.0, there was a little bit of a learning curve there, especially with the extra challenge that you get with the Crown Regent, which was awesome, and the fact that you couldn't defend for others. I think I might have, at our first table, I was actually with Will, and I think I might have said, so can I defend for the people I support?
Yeah,
and
I think you were actually trying to defend for me, if I remember right.
I was. Yeah, I wanted to get that sweet, sweet renown. But yeah. So might have watched some college football and drank a lot of alcohol on Saturday after the joust, and then woke up in less than optimal conditions on Sunday morning for the melee. Daryl left to go get everything set up. I was staying with Daryl. And so he left to get everything set up and be ready to judge. And I was like, okay, this is great. I have an hour. I'll make a deck now. And so I did. And I knew that, to Will's point, talking about locations and onboard restricted cards and things that you could use as bartering tools, I knew that I was not going to play Superior Claim or Lady Sansa's Rose. I knew that I wanted to have something that I could utilize on demand that couldn't be canceled by Hand's Judgment, that I could also use on an opponent or fellow player, however you want to say it, one of their characters as a bartering tool. So I went with Plaza of Pride. I knew that I was going to play some Targaryen in this deck after seeing Queensguard the day before. I'm like, I love that. Stan seems really fun. And if I remember anything from my melee experience, it is Stan and Renown are really good. So when I sat down to build the deck, that's what I thought of. So I'm like, okay, slot in 3 Queensguard, slot in 3 Plaza of Pride. What else does some standing? Barrison Selmy. He's a knight. So let's do some knights. And so then I put in the into the plot deck, I put in the 2 attorneys for the king. I was like, 8 initiative is good. Renown for all my knights is good. What else stands and does multiple challenges? I went to Tyrell and I said, okay, Green Apple Knights, this is going to be good. I like where I'm going with this. And then found some other cards I didn't expect to see. There's an event from Targaryen, Shira Kirak or something. I never pronounced it correctly. Thank you. Appreciate that.
The great melee card.
So I was like, this seems really good. Let's put that in there. Oh, and you know how you can easily pull that off? Use the Knight of Flowers with his text from the core set. And then, oh, how about I put some tourney lances in there? Seems good. And so then the jousting pavilion slotted itself in, and that's kind of got me where I was. My plot deck, I played a little possum by playing Trading with the Pentoshi as my opener. I was like, I'm going to make myself look like an idiot. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just going to give gold to everybody and have less gold than everybody. But by doing that, I could guarantee that I'd be able to play out at least 2 or 3 nights with the worst possible setup. And I also wasn't going to make an immediate enemy of myself. In my first table, like I said, I was with Will, and I think I did come out a little bit too aggressively. I had a really strong setup and was able to charge out to more power than I probably should have in the first 2 turns. And Will definitely out-politicked me. And so I ended up getting last place at that table. But what I did, as I learned from that, and I was like, you know, I need to slow roll this even a little more than I had intended to. Also in my plot deck, I had Withering Cold because I had so much stand with the Queen's Guard and the Plaza of Pride.
That was spicy. I loved seeing that.
And then the other piece of spice that I had was the Bloody Flux. And I was playing against a Greyjoy player that had many saves in table 2. And so I had thrown that out there, and then he felt real safe about his saves. And then the other two players at my table countered after I had blown that on, I think it was turn two or three. They showed up with the fortified position and King in the North to blow out the saves going forward with Victarion and the Iron Mines. So that was pretty slick on their part.
You are skipping over in our first game when you tried to convince everyone at the table so hard, including me, that I was going to flip Valor on.
I couldn't believe that you weren't going to, because you would have won the game if you did.
And then you flipped Bloody Flux, and I think I flipped...
Assuming that I didn't have Bloody Flux.
Oh, well, right, but I didn't have Valor, because I think, as we discussed earlier, it's not a great play in Melee. So I forget now what I flipped that term. I think maybe it was actually Wildfire Assault, but
it was.
Yeah, I just liked how sure you were.
Oddly enough, it turned into a second time in the tournament where if you had flipped Valor, you would have won.
Uh-oh.
And we'll see. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to ask, could anyone else hear Tommy? I heard oddly enough, and then it went silent. I wasn't sure if it was.
I heard him.
For anybody else.
Yeah, so just in case anybody didn't hear, I said, oddly enough, that turned into the second instance where if you had Valor and been able to flip it, you would have won the game.
Yeah, that's fair.
You did end up winning that table, though, correct?
Yes. Yeah, I did end up winning that first table.
Yeah, I thought so. So I ended up getting last place there and then was able to win my next two tables and make it in as the fourth seed, narrowly edging out Ryan Jones by, I believe, a single point, 26-25, if I remember correctly.
Yep, it was a tight one.
And just barely snuck in. And at the final table, I was definitely at a disadvantage, I think, in the first two turns. I was able to get a little bit of economy and location set up more than I had earlier in the first couple tables, but Will was definitely in a real strong position, and he ended up getting himself in a real good spot where he had the go ahead and give me the 2.0 version, because I'm going to say I had a tie again.
Oh, it was Seize the Initiative that I had.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, absolutely optimal situation where I had one initiative, I believe, with Bloody Flux again. And
yeah, I think so.
And our other opponent that was playing Stark was able to cancel that with a Bran Stark. And that was the only cancel that anybody had in the entire game. And he was able to spend it at exactly the right time to give me the opportunity to do my challenges first, because everybody was well aware that if Will was able to go first, he was going to take the table down. I slow played it enough that I didn't look like a huge threat going into that turn, I think, because I think I was only at like 5 or 6 power, if I remember. But I was able to also grab the Crown Regent for that turn. Or is it the Hand of the King? Whichever the one that gives me the second power challenge.
Double power. Yeah. Hand of the King.
Yeah. And with my non-kneelers and the Beacon of the South that I had on my Knight of Flowers, I was able to put myself in a position where I had the win condition on the table. And it came down to a situation where either the redirect places me coming at Will or puts me in a situation where I'm attacking Matt. And in either instance, it's either I win on that challenge or it passes over and the game is taken by
Mike.
Help me out, Will.
By Michael.
Yes, Mike. I kept wanting to say Renly because of his awesome mat with his dog on it, but
Michael.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so he was also in a position where he had victory on the table. So it was a really interesting last round where, you know, if Will gets that seizing the initiative, he wins the game. Because it was canceled, I had the win condition at my feet. And then if it passes one more turn, then Michael would have had it for him. So there was a lot of negotiating and jockeying. And at the end of the day, Matt decided that he was just going to, after the decision was made that there was not going to be a redirection of the challenge, by the title that Michael had, Matt decided he was going to flip a coin, and I was fortunate enough to win the coin flip and get that one last power that I needed. But it was quite a table, and the ebbs and the flows from turn two to that, the end of that challenge, was crazy.
Oh yeah, and there was so much on that particular challenge. I mean, just to clarify just a little bit more of the situation for folks, Tommy actually initiated the challenge at Matt, who was in last place, had kind of had a rough start and just had been on tilt for quite a while. And speaking of, he didn't even remember his own brand. I was, you know, that close to getting the seized off if Mike had not reminded him of his brand. So he sent it Matt's way. If he got it through on Matt, he was going to win. He could also get it through on me. And I'm trying to remember exactly how it was. If I believe Mike had enough stuff on the board, he would win the power challenge himself and win the game on defense by just defending out with all his renown.
He had the Bastard of God's Grace, I believe. So on defense, yeah, he'd be able to steal, if I remember correctly.
Right. Plus some renown, because I think he had his own Knight of Flowers and stuff too. So it was an awkward spot there where, you know, somebody wound up having to be Kingmaker, and there was the double choice that Mike was trying to figure out if there was some way to use the redirect to force things in such a way that Tommy did not win the game, which was possible if the other two players played along with it. But because Matt was so far behind, I mean, he had an okay board, but he had virtually no power, not really anybody with down or anything. So he was not going to win in his challenges, and it would go to Mike for sure. So it was an awkward place that somebody had to play Kingmaker at that final table. But overall, I feel
well, and everybody has to bear in mind too that Matt couldn't win a challenge on his own. He required your pump from your character.
Yeah. I did forget that,
because I had the joust text,
right,
that allowed him to not defend with more than one character. So for him to be able to stop me from winning, not only did he have to commit his Catelyn Stark, but you also had to commit a pump from your board to him to stop me, which then left both of you wide open for Michael to come in and steal the victory.
Right. So overall, like, I still feel okay about it because, you know, unlike other controversial stuff in first edition, I strongly felt that everyone was looking out for their own best interests. And of those of us that were in a position to win, we all tried as hard as we conceivably could to win. And Matt, who was not in a position to win, didn't go out of his way to tag team in any strange shape or give something away. He honestly, you know, tried to make that final decision as fairly as he could. So, you know, it's just a multiplayer game. That's sometimes how it happens. I feel good about the event and the final game. Everyone played strongly.
Well, and as far as the melee goes, there was a lot of action. There was a lot of lobbying. The initiative piece was so huge because everybody, I believe both you, myself, and Michael all played an 8 initiative plot on that final turn.
Yes.
And I had the least amount of power because you guys had knocked me down the previous turn significantly. And I, because of that fact, I was able to win the initiative. Now, you did have that event, which would have been pro play all day, but you know, that the fact that you guys had taken me down is actually what ended up giving me the opportunity to win.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. It's so hard to see all ends when there's so many variables involved.
Yep, absolutely. But it was fun. I mean, I hadn't had as much fun playing Melee. Like I said, I had only played 6 games of 2.0, but I had a really good time. Everybody that I played with the entire tournament was class act, and, you know, like Kyle said, was playing with an understanding of how the dynamic is supposed to work, and nobody was just getting bludgeoned because they didn't get it. So it made for a really great environment. And, you know, just like anything, when you're in a multiplayer situation, you need a little fortune to make sure that you win. You either need to get a good initiative flip, you either need to have somebody make a mistake or whatever, because at the end of the day, everybody's going to work to try and make sure that you don't steal it before they can.
Yep.
But it was a lot of fun, and I was glad that I played. Generally speaking, I'm either driving or traveling on the day that Melee goes off, which is why I don't get to play it as much as I want to. But on a holiday weekend like this, it was great to be able to participate. And I'll reiterate again, you ran a great event, and the prize support was second to none. Couldn't say anything more about it.
Well, before we head on to Rookery, I think my final kind of parting thought about Melee as a whole is, I guess this last chapter pack that was legal at the time, Streets of King's Landing, did make a sizable splash in Melee, but maybe not as big of a splash as I expected. You know, Queen's Guard obviously proved itself. I really expected to see Poor Fellows everywhere. It seems like such a cheap, like, minuscule investment for such a huge upside in Melee. Didn't see them. However, I did see Uneasy Truce a lot. And I've got to say, as someone who was not playing Uneasy Truce, I don't think it really played out the way folks wanted or expected it to.
I had it in my plot deck and it underperformed.
Yeah. I really discovered once I kind of saw the back and forth, and maybe part of this is my deck that doesn't really, care that much about defending anyway. Like, it just most of the time kind of wants to just come out and do its thing, like, which does tend to make it a target, right? Everybody always sees the Greyjoy, they see Great Kraken, whatever it might be, and Asha. They're like, we got to do something about that. But the thing is, once you get up around like that 10 power point, and someone flips that Uneasy Truce on turn 2 or 3, now they've made it really awkward for someone to attack you to knock you down, because they give you power every time they do it. And you know what? I've got like saves, and I barely ever have cards in hand anyway, so I don't care that much about the intrigue. And if you want to hit me on that stuff to like try and knock me down, all right, I'll eat it. You just put me, you know, 2 power closer to the win. And a power challenge, well, you're just stealing back the 1 power you gave me for initiating it. So I'm still in the same spot. Other people's Uneasy Truces helped me way more than they like slowed the game down or anything. So It was interesting. All right, nobody else jumping there. We want to hit the wild wild west of Rookery.
Sure.
All right. Well, I had the poorest performance in Rookery, so I'll just say it was the end of a long weekend. And I wanted to play an experimental Lanny Wars shadow deck, and that was a bad idea. So I came in last place out of that tournament. Moving on to whoever was after that.
Kyle? Or Dustin?
In a Rookery?
Yeah.
I think I came in sixth.
That's I came in Kyle. Bad. Yeah. Turns out playing cards hungover and on 3 hours of sleep is not. So night before, I would say, I really want to play the Mind with Jesse again, and I never want to play it with Tommy again. Tommy is banned.
Fuck you, bro. That was really fun.
It was really fun. And then you Tommy'd yourself, and then us, and then the game. I think in that order. All on the back of Bush Light and whatever other pale beer he could find. But yeah, so that ended at like 5:30, 6, something stupid. 5:30.
Yeah, right about there.
And I like laid down, and I think I closed my eyes, and then Danelli's like, "Asshole, get up! It's 8 a.m." I was like, "This seems dumb," but that's what happened. And so then I show up in a bad way to play Rookery, and I think I just used my Joust deck, which was a common theme, it seemed. No. I used Dustin's.
National Champion deck.
I was I'm going to use it with no Rookery, which I thought was a cool experiment, right? Like, let's take what is theoretically the best deck of the weekend and see if people, knowing it and knowing what it does, and at that point, essentially knowing the list, can beat it when they have a sideboard to deck against it. My mind, great, like, thought experiment. I'm a scientist. I love it. First game's against Builders, and one challenge in, I go, you can get to... fuck it. And it was just downhill from there. Math is hard when you can't count in your head. And then I lost to someone, to Jesse. Jesse played a super fun deck, mm-hmm. and I played like a chump. It was real bad. I don't know, Jesse has superpowers and apparently recharges like the Energizer Bunny and was good to go. I was not, and so he took me out real bad. And then I took a bye in round 3 so I could go to Steak and Shake with SoCal, which I do not regret.
Nice. It's because Steak and Shake's fucking delicious.
And then I got that garlic butter burger and a peanut butter milkshake.
Well, nothing. I mean, it doesn't have anything on a
Whataburger.
Oh, what's the place out
Definitely
there?
Definitely Whataburger.
In and out.
Whataburger is the best.
Whataburger's not the best.
No, I'm from Texas. It definitely is.
I do like Whataburger a lot. I like Whataburger a lot. Whataburger is like... Yeah.
Jalapeno cheddar biscuits, man. Nothing beats
those.
Good.
Those were good. I don't deny that.
It's like Wendy's patties with McDonald's fries. Too. And they're nice. They come around. They take your tray. They get you refills. Like, it was nuts. Whataburger in Texas was real nice.
Whataburger's fries can't compare to the In-N-Out fries, man. In-N-Out fries are so good.
I was not... Like, they were okay. I'm just not a big fan of animal style. I think that's my problem, is I don't like onions that much.
Oh, that's my thing.
And it was...
You gotta get the animal style and then the regular ones to go.
That's a lot of food.
Anyway. Oh, I love food.
Yeah. Not you know, food. I kind of am, too. There's Steak and Shake way too close to the house. All right, we gotta get to talking about something else. All right, who's up at this point?
All right, so Rookery, I was played CT first. That's right, I was playing against CT. I was playing my Martell Knight deck, and had some sideboard stuff, brought some stuff in. It helped out a little bit against CT, but he was able to beat me out on that one. He was playing Drowned God, and I got greedy. I had a Someone Always Tells in hand. I played Tourney for the King to try and close it out, and he played Valor, and that was a bad call on my part. So I should have let it go another turn, played something like Trade Routes, cancel his Valor, and then win the next turn. But I did not do that, and that's on me. Next game, I went up against, I believe you, Will, if I remember right.
Yeah, I think so.
Yep, went up against you. What were you playing again? I don't remember now off the top of my head.
it was Lanny Wars to Come.
Right. Okay. I don't remember the details of that very well, but I know I won.
I seem to recall I drew a boatload of income. I feel like I was getting like +6 gold or something by the end of the game, and nothing really to do with it.
Yep. And so Knights took it down there, and then went up against Andras. And, what was Andras playing? I don't even remember what Andras was playing either. But he knew how Martell Knights worked, and because he and I had brought that to KublaCon. And, Martell Knights won there, too. So I went 2-1 with the Rookery, but, I was in 6th, and we only got to top 4. You're going to have a lot of 2-1s with that. So, yep, that's how that went. And sideboard, I mean, it helped a little bit, but realistically, I didn't feel, I don't know, I prefer Joust.
That's fair. That's what some folks were just playing. Like,
a lot of people.
Our champion, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not really a huge, not really a big Rookery fan. I played in a big tournament here in Indy with it. And so I decided to not take a Rookery. I just wanted to play something fun. So I took Barrow Wolf, which is exactly what it sounds like. Just super grindy Neil stuff. And, like Ramses and Wards and attrition from the Wolf Banner. It was interesting and it was fun. I really liked it a lot. Every game I played was just like a grind fest. And yeah, I had a good time. I got a sweet deck box out of it.
Hell yeah.
Go.
Yeah. It was a great end to a great weekend. So.
Well, and thank you. Thank you for coming and playing at all of the official tournaments. But, you know, not to give too short a shrift to it, though I'm sure listeners don't want all the nitty gritty. But we still have one more champ with one other tournament. What was that, Kyle?
It turns out I am still good at the game that doesn't quite seem to matter as much as it used to. It's not quite as catchy as the only game that matters, but it'll pick up. But my story is not a good one. I think Schoenthal brought the cube. Is that right, Jesse?
Yeah, he did.
Yes. I asked him if he had the 1.0 cube. So Eric Green and I were playing Onitama, and then we remembered that Schoenthal had a 1.0 cube. And we were like, oh my God, I've never played 1.0. Eric had, and I was like, I want to try it, so let's play it. And so he was like, cool, you got to find a couple more people. So we found 8 people, we cube drafted, and it was a blast. It was so much fun.
I actually did not play
draft in general.
Draft in general is super good and was a wildly popular format in first ed that hasn't seen as much support in second, but hopefully that changes. But I actually did not draft my deck or play the first round. I got caught up, I think.
Yeah. Daryl did.
And drafted this really sweet Lannister rush deck that used what I thought was one of the more interesting agendas from first ed, where you were allowed to do 2 intrigue challenges instead of just one. But if your opponent won any intrigue challenge, they could either draw a card or claim a power. So huge drawback, huge upside. The deck felt like I'd run something at one point in first ed that was similar to what had kind of been constructed. Changed out some cards that maybe didn't seem inherently strong reading them, but work really well with it. There's the main concept I try to get out and then abuse is there's a Pyat Pri in first ed that was essentially a 3-cost, 3-strength Miri from early 2.0 infamy, same ability. So that way you leverage it, either go early and do it on the intrigue challenge to clear way for the other ones, or you leave him standing for your first 3 challenges with that threat that, okay, I have to defend against Pyat Pri, otherwise he's just going to kill my best character. And just leveraging him and some other powerful Lannister cards. But felt good. I miss it. Like I think Jesse can attest to, it's kind of like the Wild West of Thrones. Power level is all over the place, and it was a lot of fun. And I maintain my record. I don't think I've ever had a losing record at a tournament you could drink while you played. So to keep that legacy going is a point of pride for me.
Well done. It's an important skill, not one that the Thrones community has honed nearly as much as everyone wants to, I think.
You should come to Thrones War this next year, man. It's going to be at a pub. It's going to be great.
It's at Alesmith, which is one of my favorites. Yeah. My wife and I actually talked tonight and decided that we are doing Kubla this next year instead of Thrones War. You only make it out to California once. And just because of money and vacation and some other things, the way it lines up, the Vansels will be heading out west for Kubla. Just kind of is a little more fun for her. She can do some more things. And I was actually born in San Francisco and have some family out that way. So we kind of can kill a whole lot of birds with one stone by making that trip.
There you go. Nice.
Which I hear you can also drink at. So, you know. I have the high ground.
No, nobody drank. Nobody drank at all at KublaCon last year. Nope.
Well, so one other thing I'm going to shepherd us to, though I regret due to technical difficulties and the BS portion of the new podcast name, we are probably not going to dwell on this as long as I had initially wanted to. But regardless, I did want to hit a little bit of a kind of plus and minus for the weekend and hear a little bit of quick feedback from you guys and offer a couple of thoughts on my own. So apologies, this will have to be a relatively fast one, but I'm happy to chat more about this with folks later. So, pluses and minuses from folks.
I'll go first. Plus, I thought the turnout was really great. I had some concerns with it being in Springfield just because there's no major airport there. That can sometimes make logistics tricky. So that was a worry of mine, and with some of the short notice and all the kind of raw deals that Will got dealt, I was just nervous that turnout would not be what it was, but I think the community showed up in spades and represented well from both coasts and all over the country, and that was it was really great. It was nice having a big Midwest tournament. My con is for it being nationals. It would have been nice to see some more official support. I felt like Will got put in a tough place having to find his own judges. And there were some other things where it would have been nice if FFG had sent anybody down for this. I mean, just I understand that Will's running it and everything again was a scramble, but some sort of official presence would have, I think, added a little more weight to the weekend, and it would have been nice having it's always just nice to have a company say for tough moments, someone to fall back on. I think that would have helped the weekend overall go a little more smoothly, but that's mine.
Right on.
I'll go. Plus and minuses. Plus, I think it was a phenomenal event, mostly from the top to the bottom. I thoroughly enjoyed my time there. I think Will and Kristen are the best hosts on Thrones. I love the Springfield store. I think Metagames is unbelievable. I think everyone who came and volunteered, like Greg and K-Tom and Daryl, you know, they did a good job. Disappointed about how the cut was done. Don't think it was right. But I mean, they ran the tournament. They got to choose. I think we should have just done X and two and just left it at that. But, I mean, it didn't ruin my experience or anything like that. I mean, there's always something to disagree with. But if FFG would just, when they decide to run, I don't know, a U.S. Nationals, if they would just like appoint someone as the head judge or TO, that would be phenomenal. And we would, or like, I don't know, set rules about how things should be done. But I mean, So that's more on them than anyone else. But I had a blast. I think it was a phenomenal run event. I hope they get it again. If I had any say in it, I would want it to be there again.
Yeah, running the risk of sounding redundant, I totally agree. I feel like, Will, everything that you did knocked it out of the park. The prize support was phenomenal. Organization was great from the perspective of having to take it all on by yourself. And, you know, you supported all the different formats. I would have liked to have seen a draft, but that's only because I don't really give a crap about Rookery. But who am I to complain since I had to drive during that anyway? Everything else I thought was fantastic. And then I'm going to pile on with Kyle and Jesse. I mean, how much does it cost to send one single person down? I mean, if you're saying this is nationals, send somebody. It's not the end of the world. You're going to spend a couple $100 and your PR in the community is going to exponentially benefit. So just think about that kind of stuff and do the right thing.
I'm even okay.
That's what I would say.
And I'm super thankful that, you know, K-Tom and Greg, they came back. They don't play the game anymore.
Oh, for sure.
They're not connected. Like, I'm so glad they came back and showed their faces and you know, came back after all these years and tried to do it. And, like, I'm not in any way saying that they didn't do a good job or anything like that. I promise I'm not trying to negatively impact that in any way. I just think that there should be an official way to do an X and 2 cut at this point that just – it's just a failure on FFG's part. Like,
absolutely.
It's just a failure on their part. I hope in no way, if anyone's listening to this, mm-hmm. I actually – Will can attest this. I personally thanked every single person who helped. I singled out everyone there, especially K-Tom, like Greg, everyone. I think they did a great event. I just think, like, he was trying to please everyone, and it just – you know, if there were official ways to do it, then it wouldn't be a problem.
Yeah, it's – if you're going to
– right, leave, anytime there's subjectivity, it's going
to
be tough.
Yeah, the rules state, you know, that they leave so much up to your TO, and there's so much up for interpretation, and there's hardly any guidelines. And if that's how you're going to do it, like, that's fine, but then you need people that you trust and are, like, you know, sanctioned by FFG to come down and do this. You know, Will's in a tough spot. He's got to find judges for nationals. Now, K-Tom and Greg are in a tough spot. And so he needs to find someone who's going to come to the middle of Missouri and doesn't want to play. So, you know, luckily, you know, K-Tom and Greg sit there all weekend to do that. Like, that's a huge undertaking and a huge ask.
And Daryl. Don't forget Daryl.
And Daryl. Yes. I mean, all three of them. I mean, K-Tom drove down or flew in, I'm not sure which, but traveled to support this so that Will had someone. And for then, he, like you said, he's now put in a tough spot where he's got no FFG guidelines to help him do this. So I think everyone made the best with what they could, but there are easy fixes here, systematic fixes that eliminate this problem.
Agreed.
Well, yep. And the one last thing that I wanted to get out there is agreeing with Jesse that if anything was up to me, I would definitely want Will and Meta to get it again, because I think they did everything they possibly could with the hand that they were dealt.
And throw in, like, the store credit back. I mean, Meta has never made a dime off of any of these tournaments, and that has always been something I've appreciated.
They really pay it
they
forward.
They throw as much as they can back at everyone, make sure they have a good experience. That store is a class act. Like, having traveled a lot for this community, that is the bar for what a great store should be.
And that's without taking into account anything that Will and Kristen did on their own in terms of, like Jesse said, being great hosts and supporting the prize, at, like, door prizes and things far beyond what FFG does. So, I mean, if you want a great event, you should keep it there.
And
so,
and don't forget our sponsors that help out there too. I do want to make sure that Shire Postmint and Dogma Games get respect for
phenomenal prize support, phenomenal support. It was all unreal.
Absolutely. And throwing out discount codes. I mean, not only is it brilliant getting sponsors, that's something I don't know of a lot of people have reached out to help support their events before. But it's a brilliant idea. And I think your sponsors also came through. I mean, Dogmite could have sent one deck box for one person, but to send, I looked them up. Those boxes go for like $150 online new. Three of them down, custom engraved with like your Nationals logo. I mean, that's going
right
to the top. Same thing with Shire Post Mint. Like they didn't need to send that many coins. The fact that they went out. They went out and did it. Like that's, those are the kind of things that as players, we need to turn around and support. And next time you're looking for new coins or looking for cool things to like, for like carriers or deck cases or whatever, like go look at Dogmite, go look at Shire Post, because I think both of them, it's easy to get lost in it because they're a company, but went above and beyond to support this game and to provide good price support. And the Dogmite guys, at least I know, are current and ex-Thrones players. I mean, they're up in Michigan. Yeah. They've been doing this since First Ed, and they've been listening to this podcast for 5-6 years now. So, like, you're helping your own community out by supporting those guys. So,
well, and as Kyle can attest to, outside of just deck boxes and organizers and things like that, they have the capacity to custom make pretty much anything they ask for. Kyle has a fantastic full collection box that they made custom for him, and I'm sure they'd do the same for anybody in the community. So
that's awesome. Yeah, I heard about that. That's really cool. So I'll do my pluses and minuses real quick. A lot of the same of what you guys are saying. I mean, prize support, amazing, Will. The door prizes for everybody, I know that's something that you like to do. I think it was spot on. Great job. Lots of variation in the prizes so that everybody could kind of find something they wanted with the raffles. The huge, huge prize was the deck box to me. Beautiful, really well done. And just running a solid tournament. You know, I think you did great with communication. I think you kept everybody very well informed leading up to the tournament, what was going on, what was happening, you know, prizes, everything. You know, you had great emails going out on a regular basis. As far as cons, I hate to end it on cons, but me, I'm new with Second Ed. I didn't really know K-Tom. I knew Greg from having gone down to a tournament meta before. Greg didn't have any problems with, but seeing K-Tom and some of his interactions with some of the players, if I was a new player at this tournament, that would have turned me off a little bit, knowing that he's a head judge and just kind of his attitude towards some people. I know we talked about this on Wars to Come a little bit, but that really bothered me. Because seeing that and hearing some of the way that he was talking, it was frustrating.
So not knowing him at all, like my interaction with K-Tom is the same interaction you have. Let me ask you if it changes your mind that his profession is law. And he was thrown in, he was thrown into a 70-person tournament, like without any, like without. I mean, without any practice in the last 3 years.
Yeah, that's not to say no practice. He's been running Iowa Worlds for Kyle for the last couple, right?
But I get him for that reason, for the what is a con here. Like, I knew Iowa Worlds was A, people were going to be drinking, and B, there was going to be a lot of big egos in the room. And K-Tom, for better or for worse, is going to stand his ground and stand by whatever he says. So I was like, I just need you to take charge as what becomes a slowly a larger and larger drunken mess and just make sure people sit down and play their games.
I will say that his personality with some judge calls just how he does stand his ground. I will agree with you that it personally, I'm not that type of person. So when people act that way, it does sour me a little bit. But like talking to him and having conversations with him, I think he definitely grew on me as the weekend went by. I don't think he actually meant any ill will by it. I don't know the guy. I could be completely wrong. He could be the biggest asshole in the world. I have no idea. But I don't think he meant any ill will in how he did it. I think he might have been a little overwhelmed at times, and he just decided standing his ground was the best.
Yeah, and I don't know either. I really don't. It's just I know that if I – and we had a lot of new players at that tournament. We had some people that hadn't been to many, Colin being one of them, you know, and he was pretty cool with everything, you know, throughout the weekend. But I know we had some new players, and if I were one of those new players, I know that would have made me sour a little bit. Now, maybe personal interactions would have been a different thing, but that did bother me. So just my thought.
The one thing that I want to say is that – you know, given the hand that he was dealt and the fact that you know, he's doing this out of his own generosity.
Yeah.
You know, you have to keep that in mind, right? This guy has nothing but the best of intentions for Game of Thrones, the Game of Thrones community, and every player there. Every decision that he made was to try and do as much right by as many players as he possibly could. And, you know, for better or worse, maybe some people perceived it one way or the other. At the end of the day, he was donating his time and he did the best that he felt that he could. And I think we all need to at least show appreciation for that.
I agree with you.
And understand that nobody is ever going to please everybody in a room of 75 people. I don't care who you are.
For sure.
Right. So,
and the one thought, I think this kind of sums up, you know, some of the things, criticisms we had is, so imagine if K-Tom said, no, I'm not going to drive down, and Greg said, hey, I'm busy that weekend. Who's officiating your national tournament? You know, I mean, the room goes silent, right? Because now one of us either steps out of the tournament to do it, or what?
Or you're leaving it to Daryl by himself, which is unfair to him.
But that is definitely one of the things I wanted to bring up, that, like, I'm very glad we got three people to run this. I sort of felt like we needed a full four. It takes a lot of people, actually, to make something like this go off and keep everything moving throughout the weekend. I'm terrified at the thought of, if I had not been able to draft those guys and say, just me trying to run it by myself, and obviously not playing, that would have been a nightmare. Just a nightmare. That said, that was good from you guys. I mean, I think you brought up some valid stuff. I felt like I needed to say both pros and cons to keep things moving from both sides, though it was, I think, more the cons that I was interested in addressing. And you know, I didn't want to insert myself too much into shaping that up front. And I think you guys covered some of what I wanted to hit on there as far as personalities and, you know, volunteer help to make this go off. And while I think there are definite different opinions on some of the tournament, like, structuring calls, like mechanical aspects of the tournament that were made, I guess I'm not aware of anybody coming to say, you know, that a rules call was wildly off. You know, somebody was like, hey, can I use a duplicate to save from cold hands? And somebody was like, no, that can't be done. Like, I feel there were a few that folks stopped to look up, but to the best of my knowledge, these guys were on top of it. I mean, a lot of the rules structurally are stuff they're familiar with, and I know they've been doing research beforehand. I mean, Daryl's helped run our last couple big tournaments in Missouri, so he's been trying to stay up on this stuff in general. So I just kind of double checking, are you guys aware of, like, anything rules wise that was awkward or
there was one?
Okay.
There was one missed call, but it wasn't like it was fixed by the people at the table.
Okay, gotcha. Okay. Well,
it was just like Underground Vault versus Summer Harvest. Like, it's an awkward ruling, gotcha. Anyway.
Yeah. And then at the very beginning of the tournament, and they fixed this real quick, was K-Tom thought you couldn't use dupes to save, or you couldn't dupe on setup. That's what it was. He thought you couldn't dupe on setup. They fixed that off the bat.
Right, too. Right. Because I think that was the one he said he stopped to go look up and then gave the right.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, there are.
Yeah.
That was there are definitely, you know, pros and cons to how deep someone is to the game right now versus their willingness to forego playing at premier events. But I feel like making the right call is the important thing in the end. And, you know, even if it involves somebody having to stop to look it up, if the right call is made in the end, I feel like the job was done. So it sounds like that aspect was pretty minimal. So that's good. At least. On the structural front, That's one that, well, basically the final say is left up to the actual TO running the event, as far as things like, say, what you're cutting to, how many players you're cutting to. And, you know, there was discussion behind the scenes about some of what you actually do as far as how many you cut to in order to maximize enjoyment of the community. And, you know, this 5 and 2 number that people pull out, it's kind of an accepted wisdom sort of thing, but it's still an arbitrary number. So I, in the position I was in, because I wanted to play, tried to make very certain that I was never going to overrule one of those guys that was actually kind of boots on the ground, so to speak. Because if I put myself in a spot where I am now going to throw out any of their decisions, now I am actively running the tournament that day. I am involved in how things play out other than my actual games, and now I need to not be playing. I stand pretty strong that if I had done something like that, or allowed myself to reserve that right to overrule anything, that I should not have been playing. So, you know, that it was kind of my stance on that sort of thing. I wanted to play. Selfish as that is, I know.
Well, and Will, the other thing that I'll say is the couple of times that where they had to ask you a question about something, be it distribution of prizes for Joust or whatever, and you were in a melee game, the judges did a great job of saying, you know, we're going to ensure that this interference does not impact the outcome of your game. If you guys end up going 3 minutes over, we're going to ensure that that doesn't impact the outcome. Like, so I want to just give Greg and Kaitan their due credit for how they handled that when they did have to come and ask you a question.
Yeah, and I did allow myself the aside that, hey, I would still kind of help make sure prizes got out and file that under the list of things to do better for next year if we get the chance. For next year, I'll have like a checklist sheet or something listing, you know, this prize is for such and such and so on. I had sorted them into separate boxes like for each event and sort of things. But it still was not super clear to those guys exactly, you know, within each box, what was, say, a raffle prize versus like a top four prize and things like that. So,
yeah, you can't prepare for everything.
So, you know, there's stuff like that that's like on the list to improve. One of which leads to one of the other things I did want to make sure that I addressed, which was on the morning of the cut, when my like personal nightmare still happened, which is,
you poor bastard.
Yeah, which is someone not being there for the cut, right? Like Dustin can vouch for this a couple of years ago at a regional where there were some disqualifications and different things and it got crazy. Kyle can vouch for this at Gen Con, two Gen Cons ago. Like missing your attendance on the cut is not cool. So I tried very, very hard to make sure I walked up and down the room announcing that, like yelling it to everybody, you know, be here 9:30, be here 9:30. Someone still was not there. So if we can do it again next year, I think we're going to add like a printed sheet on like the front door of Meta and like taped to the wall behind the judges station or something so that people can read it as well. But that did lead to some awkwardness next day when Matt wasn't there. You know, technically he had the window till 10 o'clock. So about 9:50, about 10 minutes out, which, you know, where most folks are staying in Springfield, they were about 10 minutes drive away. So that was the point when we started trying to get a hold of him, like, hey, are you on your way? Will you make your game? He said he was on his way. So we were like, okay, we're going to fudge this because knowing things like Kyle's experience, Kevin and Greg and Daryl were very wary of just straight disqualifying someone for not being there on time. So there was kind of some bending over backward to try and give him time to arrive before we found out that, oh, he's coming from St. Louis, and oh, he thought the cut was at the melee start time of 11. Which is its own nightmare. But then that led to the question of, do we go ahead and let number 25 in? If we do, do we let things, do we sub him in directly? Do we reseed and repair? And I know that caused some ruffled feathers too. And I know that was talked about some on Worse to Come, but an aspect of that I don't feel was really hit on is that, you've already got some folks kind of miffed at, the buy issue, which was another thing to bring up. I knew I had something else from the day before, which wound up cutting Colin. So there's a bit of an impetus to, now that an opportunity presented itself, to rectify it by getting Colin in. And there were some folks that wanted the game. That wanted everything to be repaired. But then also at that point, there's the consideration, people have spent all night thinking about whatever their matchup is, because you know who you're playing against, what their deck is, like they've been planning and betting on this. At this point, because we were trying to bend over backwards to let Matt get there if it was possible, other games have already started. They've put cards on the table. Like, how does everyone feel when your expected matchup is no longer your matchup, and maybe that nuts setup that you drew is no longer your setup? There were additional factors there that I think nobody was going to be supremely perfectly happy any way they handled it. So something had to be done. And I guess the other option was to just leave it as is and disqualify him, which wouldn't have been a feel great moment regardless. So better right. Cut communication, even better next time is a key thing, I think.
But like you said, like people had opinions on how it should have been handled. And I think, to Jesse's point earlier, there shouldn't be opinions. There should be an outline saying how you handle these situations. Because it's like, I think the rules document, like, well, it says, hey, like, you cut and you're done. If they don't show, they don't show. But then FFG at Gen Con last year bumped 17 in. And it's like, so you break your own rules. There's documentation. That's all we need is documentation.
Nobody should have to bear the burden of that subjectivity.
Yeah. That's fair. And I mean, that sends us to the whole buy versus super buy thing. It used to be done as super buys for regional wins. Now, as far as can be found in official documents and to best of my knowledge, people on the judge team tried to research this. Folks off the judge team tried to research this. And while many people said, well, this is how it's done now, that they are not super buys, as it were, FFG's documents don't state it at all. The entry on buys in the tourney doc is open to interpretation. I could at least say, people made arguments on both sides of that, because it doesn't specifically say anything about like prize buys or any terminology along those lines. It in plain English text, at least, the entry only mentions sometimes tournaments will have an odd number of players, and you may need to give a buy because of that. So, again, it goes back to like FFG documentation. I would love for them to document everything they do, because when there are players that come to a TO and say, hey, we thought we got supervised for this, and I've been told that's what happened, that it would not have cropped up even. Unless somebody hadn't looked at their own strength of schedule and then brought it to the judge's table and said, hey, wait a minute, I thought we got super buys, which led to this search to try and find any official FFG documentation on it, you know, then it wouldn't have happened. So add that to my list of stuff I'm going to try to do is try to prod FFG for the love of Pete. Document.
I definitely agree. I think the documentation's a huge issue. I also think that the likely the players that did that regarding the buys were being a bit disingenuous, and they probably knew what things were actually like. I'm not naming names, but I'm pretty sure I know who we're talking about here, and I think they were being disingenuous.
I'm going to say that straight up. I do not know who it was. I was just told that, hey, someone came and asked about this, so we started looking, and we do not find a definitive answer.
I'm talking about players, and I'm not naming names, but I'm pretty sure that they knew that they are not supervised anymore, and they were using that in order to either get, you know, a better seed or something like that. So,
well, that's shitty.
I know. I agree, and it's really unfortunate.
Oof. Thank God we're playing for trinkets, and these people feel the need to do that.
Yep.
Hey, now they were very nice trinkets.
Nice trinkets. I'm just saying, like, we play for like a sense of pride, and like, if you want to
sacrifice your character,
angle shoot. Right. That's the word I'll use is angle shoot. If you want to take that line, then you know you're gonna. You can take it once or twice, but after that, people start figuring out who you are.
Yep. Exactly.
And we're a very small, inclusive community, so
yep.
You can choose that route if you'd like.
Yep. But they know who they are. They can live with it, so.
Well, I'm glad I don't know who they are, because I would say their name. I wouldn't give a shit.
There you go. Okay, gents. Well, I think we've killed more than enough time for an episode this week. So much that I think I may even... I know this is sacrilege, but I may kill props and slops this week and just say pluses and minuses fills that need.
That's good with me.
If people have any other questions, comments, concerns about the event and handling, I've got a list of probably a dozen things that I've got jotted down that we want to tweak or upgrade if we have the opportunity to make it smoother next year. So I would love to either tell you, hey, that's on the list, or chat about it, see if that's something worth adding or that I can plead to FFG. So by all means, let me know.
Can we all as a group say, though, like, thank you for the huge turnout from the community, and that it was phenomenal to see everybody from such a wide range of, you know, areas all show up. Like,
that was
the most fun part for me. I mean, honestly, drinking with Jonesy, like seeing people that I hadn't seen in a long time, that's what keeps me coming back. Mm-hmm. It's not the game. It's the people.
Having that tournament of this scale, you know, let's be honest, I'm never going to be one of those multiple time world champions. So I think this tournament at this scale with these like out of towners in, you know, my home city now, and that sort of thing, like that may actually be like the pinnacle of Thrones for me, at this point. And so I want to throw out an amazing, huge thank you, to everybody involved in that as an attendee or some way involved in making the event go off. It really, really means a lot to me. I guess that closes this chapter of the White Book.
She done.
Yes.